Okay, so this is as somebody mentioned to me as I was handing this out, the existence of God. You don't really need much more than that, right? We should just stop over here. Hashem exists. That's fine. However, the problem is it's a little more complex than that. Let's discover this together. In the short time that we have, think about this from a different perspective. Sometimes these type of topics are so basic that we don't ever address them. So it's important to address and get a sense of what's really the mechanics of what's going on over here and what's expected of us. What I want to do before doing each ikar is to read the way the Rambam said it, to read the way our Siddur says it, and read the way Yigdal says it, and just for our own sake, to get a sense of what's expected of us and perhaps the differences between the different versions, and then to contemplate. This is the way the Rambam says it in his unadulterated version in his Pirush HaMishnayos. So it's a philosophical perspective. He says the following: Hayasod HaRishon, the first foundation, Metzius Habore Yishtabach, is the existence of God may be praised. V'hu Shiyesh Shom Motzui Bishlemus Ofonei HaMetzius. There is an existent, complete in all aspects of creation. V'hu Ilas Metzius Kol HaNimtzayim. And He is the reason for all of existence, which means to say, if you stop at any point in the world and say, why did this happen? Meaning if you question cause of anything, you should be able to keep questioning cause till you get back to Him.
Root cause.
Right? So you get root cause. There's no, you can't go beyond Him. But the point is that if you keep questioning in the right way, you're going to get back to Him. Right? Ilas kolam nimtzayim. Ubo kiyam ha-metzios, and in Him exists all of existence. Umenu nimshach lohem ha-kiyam, and from Him, existence flows. What's the difference between the first part of the sentence and the last and what we just read? The ilas hametzios and kiyum hametzios. What's the difference between the reason and the existence? Just if you want to just divide those two parts up. He is the reason of existence and He is the flow. Okay, so fine. So because let's draw a line between the two just for argument's sake. You could say that God is the cause of all creation because He flicked the switch and then He went on a coffee break, right? But kiyum hametzios means to say that He is still the manager, right? He's still around. He's doing things. Just that's a very important point that the Rambam is incorporating over here in existence. V'ilu nata'er, and now let's play the devil's advocate. V'ilu nata'er siluk mitziyusa. Let's say that if we were to imagine to ourselves that God didn't exist, then what would that mean? Ki oz batla mitziyus kol nimtza v'lo yisharu yikayam v'mitziyus. Then there could not be anything else. You can't say, you know, world minus God, and there's a little corner that's left. There's nothing left if God's out of the picture. And if you were to say, you know, reverse everything else in the world, universe, Milky Way, galaxies, everything else you want, Pluto even, then nevertheless, you will still, nevertheless, God won't be lacking or missing. He doesn't need anything in reality. And anything which is outside of Him from the sichlim. What is a sichlim, according in the Rambam's language? Sechel means logic or mind, but sichlim in the Rambam's terminology actually means those things which are in the intellectual realm, meaning it's his way of saying things in the spiritual realm, non-physical existence. So even those things outside of God in the non-physical realm, so what's he referring to? Angels, although the things in that nature. All those things running, the background, this is behind the scenes of everything. And everything below them, even angels need Him. Right? Even the metaphysical beings are dependent on Him. Right? Not just you know, the regular good old laws of Newton physics. And that's what the Torah says when it says, I am Hashem, your God. Okay? So the Rambam has said what it is. And now he's pushed in both directions philosophically. So if you imagine existence without Him, Hashem is not lacking. If you imagine Him without existence, there is no existence. And that is the first of the principles. Let's compare this and contrast it for a moment, just for a very brief moment, to the Ani Mamin. This is a beautiful song. We're not going to sing it right now. Afterwards, we have opportunity. Ani Mamin be'emuna shlema she'abori yisbarach shemoi. I believe with a complete memuna that Hashem, Ubore umanig l'chol abruim, Hashem is the creator and leader of all creations. V'hu levadoi asa v'oiseh v'yaseh l'chol amasim. He makes and will make all creations or forms, all creations. Notice bore umanig means, what's the difference between the two terms? Bore is is originally, and manhig is running it, right? So just what the ani mamin has done essentially is it's taken that sentence in the yasod and it's really put it into two very cohesive or succinct words, just to appreciate the difference between those two. There's two elements over here which is being expressed. And finally, when we sing it on a Friday night, the way we sing it is Yigdal Elohim Chai V'Yishtabach. Let it be praised, the living God, and let him Yigdal be great, and let him be praised. Nimtza ve'ein es el metziusa. He is found, and there's no time to his existence. That's a little difference. He said ein es el metziusa. There's no time to his existence. That's saying that God is eternal, infinite. Right, but it's not exactly the same. We haven't. It's a little too general than what we were originally saying. Right, right. It's timeless. Now it's interesting because the Yesod itself didn't seem to be focusing on that. Our original belief system was about creation and continued purview. Okay, but yes. There are claims as to who it was. I don't remember who it was, but it was pretty early on. Pretty early on. We're talking about around 500 years ago. Okay, so we have good traction on that because already the earliest Siddurim had it. But it was post Rambam. Yeah, yeah. The Yigdal and the Ani Mamins were based on the Rambam, but Ani Mamin text as well. There's also, I don't remember the name. It's a very obscure. Name of a person who put it together, but ultimately he was focusing it on the Rambam. But it is important to notice that they're not identical. Okay, it's Ani Mamin is a very nice, a very good summary, but it's not the Yesod itself, which is why it's important to learn it inside. There are lots of questions we can ask at this point in time.
It's interesting that it was accepted.
It's pretty much universally accepted, but it is important just to contrast it when we have a chance. There's lots of questions we can ask. Lots and lots of questions. Number one, just a very, very simple question. That is this a foundation? Okay, so a foundation is axiomatic. It's like when you're going into advanced calculus, there's certain rules that frame the set space, right? And those are the rules within which you operate, and then you can work with theorems within axioms. Now, the question is belief in God actually a commandment as well? Meaning, do we have to believe, or is it just a necessary prerequisite? Right, so are we expected to believe? If we are expected to believe, then where does the Torah tell us to believe in God? Okay, good. So the Rambam already said at the end of the Yesod, the Rambam says that it is a mitzvah. How do we know? Because the Ten Commandments start with the words, Anachi Hashem Elokecha Asher Atzesicha Meretz Mitzrayim. Now, if you count carefully, it's interesting. In the Aseres HaDibros in general, it happens to be that the Aseres HaDibros are broken up by paragraphs based on the commandments. Okay, so there's each paragraph is a separate one of the commandments, which is why the pasuk of Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tsinav, Lo Tsignav is actually broken into paragraphs, because there's a commandments within that pasuk. Now, happens to be that the first two are in one paragraph. There's no breakup between the first two. The first one is I am God, and number two is Lo Yelocha Elokim Acherim Alpona. There shouldn't be any other powers in my vicinity, which means everywhere. So this is interesting because, so if you count them up, you'll find that there really are nine commandments. If you really want to be, you know, strictly careful about it, there's nine commandments because there's, you know, the actual commands of what to do are only nine. But it seems like the way the Rambam understands it is what's number one is when Hashem says I am Hashem your God, the expectation is, and therefore. Know that before you don't bring in any family members into the picture. Know that that's the first commandment. So the Rambam says. So that's the first of the Ten Commandments, and that brings it up to ten, which is fantastic. The way the Rambam says it in his Sefer HaMitzvot later on. The first of all the mitzvahs in source two. On the next page. Yeah. Good. Good, yeah, because otherwise you're right. Very, very good point. Very good point. Dibros means a strongly worded statement rather than a particular command, which is important because maybe that's what the Rambam is saying. Therefore, that's why it's categorized. But the Rambam actually himself says it is a mitzvah. He pushes the envelope further than that. He actually says it's a mitzvah, and he goes on to say that it is, and he quotes a Gemara in Makos. We're not going to do it inside this point, but it's in source 2. The Rambam says, the Gemara in Makos says the following, that if you do a gematria, the Gemara in Makos says, that, what was the word that it comments on? What's the gematria of the word Torah? The word Torah itself. 611. Right, so if you do a Torah, it's Taf and Reish are 400 and 200, which is 600. Vov and Hay give you, that's the 605, give you 11. So 611. That's almost perfect, right? Right, when it comes to gematrias. Now, one off, right, everybody starts saying, two off, that's a little, you know the statistical error is not going to help you there. The kotel is not going to help you there. So what's happening? So the Gemara says, well, clearly, the reason why is Torah tzivalanu Moshe, Torah was taught to us by Moses, because Moshe only taught us 611. What happened to the other two? Oh, Hashem says them. Fantastic, right? Hashem said the first two. That's what we couldn't handle. Interestingly enough, by the way, they encompass the rest of the Torah, right? Belief in God and that shouldn't be anything else, is positive and negative, which incorporate all positive and negative of the rest of the Torah, and all of that just almost stems out of those two basic premises. Okay, just, you know, it's not like just randomly Hashem took off two. Those are the building blocks. Okay, so now, that's what the Torah says. So what the Rambam says from here, proof text, what do you see from the Gemara over here? If you're counting 613, what?
And it's a mitzvah.
Mitzvahs. And if one of them is missing and one of them is included, as Onochi Hashem Lokecha, of course it's a mitzvah. That's what Rambam says is, and that's the way he views this as a mitzvah. Very interesting. Happens to be that this is not universally accepted. The Baal Halachas Kedolos, also one of the earlier counters of the mitzvahs, says that no, nothing doing, it's not a mitzvah. The way you get the extra mitzvahs is in that lo yilacha, it's lo yisase. You also can't make and you can't have. Okay, so there's two mitzvahs over there. Onochi Hashem Lekacha isn't a mitzvah. What is it? It's a dibur. What does a dibur mean?
A statement.
So why is it included? Why is the statement included in Aseres HaDibros? He says because it says the Bahag. He says if you don't have this, there's nothing to talk about. Right? The Gemara, the Midrash Mechilta says the following. What happens is the king comes to a country and everybody says, we'll do anything you want, king. You know, tell us what you want. You want us to stand on our heads on Tuesdays, wear purple robes on Thursdays. Whatever it is, we'll do it. So the king says, folks, you got to accept me as the king before I start giving out any commands. That's number one. That's not a mitzvah. That's just the prerequisite for anything else. Because why should you believe me if I'm not? Why are you going to wear those purple robes if you don't believe in me? So the Baha'i says it's more fundamental than a mitzvah. You don't need it to be a mitzvah. It's the basis of all else. This is an important machlokes to understand, because the Baha'i might be even stronger than the Rambam. The Rambam is saying it's a mitzvah. You have to believe. The Baha'i says you can't do anything else without it. You're paralyzed from the beginning without it. That's how powerful the Baha'i views it. That's number one. So is it a mitzvah? Not so clear, but it's at the very least a mitzvah, according to the Mepharshim. But now, a very, very simple question. When Hashem tells us this, either dibur or mitzvah, what's the basis? What's the basis that Hashem gives to us for that? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So why should you know that I'm God? Because Asher Otzeisicha me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because I took you out of Egypt. Now, folks, what else could Hashem have said? Right? Yeah, listen, let's just put things in chronological sequence over here. You know, in the end of the day, Yetzias Mitzrayim happened way into the game, right? There's been, 2,000 years worth of existence from creation up to that point. So that's a weaker card to pull out as belief, right? Talk about the real thing, yeah.
Well, not exactly, because one, that's what made us, that's what made Hashem our God, because He took us out, and two, that's showing His force over creation. So basically, He's showing He created the world also.
Okay, you're saying included in it is the fact that He can press the reset shows that He actually made the world itself. Okay, no, that's good. But just in terms of the fact that the first point you said, Yehuda, that the fact that that He is our God, but Hashem saying, I want you to believe in Hashem in general. So it's a little limited to say just our God. Meaning, you can get much more bang for the buck by saying He's the one who put it all together, poured all the different chemicals together, and voila, it all came together. That should be enough for all of creation. Then you don't need to be limited to the nation of Israel. Mm-hmm. It's a very big debate in the Mepharshim as to why this is, which is more powerful, which is a stronger way. Many answers offered, but one. Rabbi Ari Kaplan actually has a beautiful book called Infinite Light. He has many wonderful books, and he talks about the existence of God. He has a very interesting suggestion. He just says that in the end of the day, remember those two words we discussed, Bore u'manhig? Right, so there's Bore is at the beginning, and Manhig is that he's in control. He says that it's more important for us to know that he's Manhig than that is Bore. Isn't that interesting? Because we can maybe prove that God was the creator. We can say and we can work it out that God was the creator of the world, but that doesn't necessarily mean or impinge on the life that I lead right now. So what does Hashem say? I want you to know that I'm the God, not only who created the world, I'm the God who cares about what you do right now, what Egypt does and what you do. I care about you. That is why what Hashem says as his prerequisite for belief, which is fascinating. Yes?
If you're coming to establish Judaism as a force as opposed to Avodah Zarah, many of the contemporary belief systems did believe in a prime mover, but that he was not the creator of the world.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Greeks believed in
very
that.
Good,
they never
very
thought
good.
That Apollo and all these others created the world. They knew there was some other creator,
correct.
But he thought he went to lunch.
Correct, correct,
so
correct.
The belief in the Manig, therefore, is more important than the belief in the Bore.
Correct. So what's interesting over here is that, and this, by the way, is where the Ramban actually goes into great depth about how each of these three tiers of Makos, if you go into the patterns, the Ramban understands that the first tier is belief in God's existence, but then you need to know that he's powerful and available to do things. That's a necessary part of the belief system. And the Makos, he has a parallel of three sets of threes, which the third of every set is actually proving exactly this point because of this, of what else everybody else was believing. Because at a certain sense, Paro said, you know, I give it to you, you got a God, but how do I know that he's here? So that's part of what this belief is coming to, certainly in that context. So this is what you see over here, yes.
If the key to the whole thing is Hashem Tzosicha, which is the main theory, why didn't Shimon Esra begin it? Why did you say, okay, I'm on occasion with Yaakov? Why did you say, right away in Shimon Esra, he gives all the praises of God. Why doesn't he use Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov instead of Hashem Tzosicha?
Okay, interesting. So when we say Elokei Avraham, Elokim denotes, just at the beginning of the Shemona Esra, Elokim denotes a unique relationship between humanity and God. So it happens to be that there were three different apertures which were opened of humanity before Sinai even, of different people who had a different relationship to God. So what we say is, we say four things actually. Elokei Nu, our personal relationship, and then there's three primary highways, which is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who had different ways of accessing. Actually, if you want to be more specific, it's actually Avraham. Yeah, Avraham and Yitzchak are the extremes, and Yaakov is actually perhaps more of a center in that. So that's more about relationships which are forged with God. Here Hashem is saying to you, I want you to believe me because of particular things, because of things I did. Avraham and Yitzchak were perhaps the people who were sitting on the sidelines saying, I get it. So we're those same people. That's why we were accessing them. But I just want to, for the sake of lack of time, I want to just get one or two points across, and that is the following. Is the Rambam actually is a little confusing, because in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, where the Rambam talks about the way that we should believe in God, notice that, look at actually source 4, the Rambam says the following, Yesod ha-yesodos va'amud ha-chochmos. This is the first halacha in all of Rambam's Yad HaChazaka, and he says, the basis of all, the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of all wisdom. By the way, that's the acronym for? Yurkei Vovke, right? He starts his book with the acronym. The first letter of each of those words is the Shem Havaya, Hashem's innermost name. He says, Leida Sheyesh Shom Matzoy Rishon, to know that there is a first being, and Humamtzi called Nimsa, and he brought into existence anything else after that. Okay? So that is what the Rambam says. Notice that in his Sefer HaMitzvos, earlier on in Source 2, he says, HaMitzvah HaRishonahi, Hatzivu is going back to source 2. Hatzivu asher tzivanu la'amin ha'elukus, that we should believe in God. So what is it? Is it to know? Leida is to know, and la'amin is to believe. Those are a little bit different concepts, right? So what are we expected to do? What is this mitzvah in the first place? Are we expected to know God? Are we expected to believe in God? A little bit of a discrepancy there. Very, very, very troubling discrepancy, because the Rambam is building off his Sefer HaMitzvahs. Rather, the Yad HaChazaka is an expansion of all the mitzvahs in their respective categories.
So what do you mean by know in that context?
Okay, so know, just if we're going to play with the words, later means to say you have information, and you can think about that information, you can digest that information, you can point to it, and you can articulate it. La'amin sometimes suggests that there's an element of a little bit of a dive, a little bit of a jump. right? That you need a bridge to places where you aren't quite there yet, and you can't necessarily get up. So, do I know what's behind this wall? I don't know what's behind this wall. So but I have to believe what's behind this wall because I can't see it. Later is that I can, you know, empirically know, understand, and reach and conceptualize it. That's what the difference is between the two concepts, which are a little bit different.
Absolutely.
Doubt and belief.
But the Rambam says both of that.
If
you have just belief, you have doubt. So you need so now. Interesting enough, there happens to be those purists who say that in fact the Sefer HaMitzvos was written in. Not Hebrew, but Arabic. So in the translation from Arabic, the word that was used in Arabic might be translated either way, whereas the Yad HaChazaka is written in Hebrew. So maybe it's not even a starter. But I wouldn't disqualify centuries and centuries of ink spilt on this particular topic. And one of the fascinating things I saw was the Adnei Paz, if I'm not mistaken, on the Rambam says such a fascinating insight. He quotes the Rambam, who has a letter to Marseille. And the Rambam says in his letter to Marseille, how do we know anything in the first place? Like, how do we trust any information in the first place? And the Rambam says that there's three ways you can know something is true. Number one is you can empirically and logically prove it, right? So you can think about it, you can mathematically, you can statistically, philosophically, you can think about it and work it out. That's one option of knowing something. Another option of knowing something is you can sense it. Right, I can touch it, I can smell it, I can hear it, I can feel it. The senses, right? Those are two different ways. And finally, the third one is if somebody who's a tzaddik, somebody who's a spiritually refined individual tells you something, you can believe it. Why is it only a spiritually refined individual? Why is it not anybody?
Additional senses.
So I think the notion is that when you come to truth, truth has only arrived with people who have managed to remove biases. So Rambam is saying the only way you can get to something really true is with a person who themselves has really, their agendas have been diminished to the point that you can really trust them. Not clear. That's what the Rambam says in his letter to Marseille. So perhaps, what the Rambam is saying over here is that of course you need to know and you need to believe. You need both. You need to be able to, at to the point that we can, get a sense of and investigate and think philosophically and empirically and mathematically and work and look at and work out God. That's part of it. But that's not all of it. There's going to be certain parts where we're going to have to rely on what is going to be told to us as well, part of the traditional process, which is tzaddikim, or people who throughout the Masorah have told us certain things. That relates to a little element of la'amin. But they're both true access points to God. They're both truly, truly access points to Hashem Himself, which is why this is now the jumping board into perhaps how we're supposed to and expected to do this. We have somewhat limited time, but let me let us begin just for a moment over here about knowledge. There's a number of proofs which are offered to about the existence of God, and to be quite honest, none of them really do the trick by themselves. Otherwise, everybody would be living in this world as we have it today. And that is, so let's start at the beginning. There's what's called a teleological proof, and that it's what's called in a most simple sense the watchmaker proof. Okay, so this goes as follows. The Chovas Levavos says it, and it is said in many sources. There's Midrashim which indicate as such. The Midrash says look, imagine that somebody were to give you an essay. And you to read this essay, and it's unbelievable. The prose, the poetry, everything inside it is really well put together, cohesive. The arguments articulate, and then you to say, "Well, you know how I found this? What happened was actually on my desk. I'm a clumsy person, and I knocked with my left elbow. I knocked the ink well over, and this is what happened. I shook it off, and then this is what appeared." So he said, "You'd be hard put to make that to say that that really happens. To get Shakespeare." And then what's called the million monkeys on typewriters, right there. This is what some people say, is that you have a million monkeys typing on a million typewriters for a million years, you never get Shakespeare. Right? No matter how random it's going to be, you're never going to get to that point. So this is what's called, that if you look at something, the way that it's William Paley says it is that if you're, it's in Source 7, he says, if I'm walking through a desert and I come across a rock, and I'm asked why the rock was there, the answer will be, well, it could have just always been there, meaning that could have been, that's where it was. But if I'm walking across the countryside and I trip on a watch, then there's no way, and certainly, now we don't appreciate that, because, you know, if you've got to read, there's a book, if you ever have a chance to read, it's called Longitude. The way that they worked out how to... the way that, that they actually worked out how to travel across the Atlantic Ocean, by the way, just this, it was such a difficult thing until about 200 years ago, 150 years ago, is how do you travel across the Atlantic? Is there was a problem. You can work out latitude very easily, right? You can work out latitude on Earth, but the problem is longitude, is that there's no way necessarily of knowing where you are in the ocean, so there'd be terrible shipwrecks. People going in the wrong direction and not even realize it because they couldn't work out how far east or west they were. And so they were trying to work out based on star charts how to do it. And ultimately, and it was a very complex mechanism because remember, the stars and the sun are moving and you're moving, right? So it was very, very complex to work this out. And they found there was another option, which was that if you can get a perfect timepiece, then you'll be able to work out longitude. If you have a timepiece which won't be affected by weather, by conditions, and it was exact to the second from the moment you left, and you could work out when midday was, and you could work out the difference between that, you could work out the difference in time. Because again, every mile you, every distance you travel is a certain amount of time, right? Our 24 time zones are approximations. Every hours of money in New York are different to, let's say, in Connecticut, right? Because even though it's the same time zone, actually there's a different time because it's a few miles away. And in fact, the watchmakers won, actually. And if you got a perfect timepiece, then you could. That was the way they actually managed to cross the Atlantic, knowing the longitude. So happens to be, if you come across the watch and you find this watch and you look at the cogs and you say, well, it just was always there, then there's a bit of a problem with that. That's what's called the teleological proof. There's another way of saying it is the following. Imagine that, you know, we have space stations listening for outer space signals. So imagine that if one day we were to hear a signal. And the signal, we see a signal which is in a particular code, in a sequence, and we hear it. So there's a few options that we could have. Number one is we could say that there is life out there after all, right? Or we could say that somebody's playing a trick on us. But nobody's ever going to consider the following. Nobody's ever going to say, you know what? It was a random set of frequencies that came together to give a coherent code. Nobody ever considers that possibility. Why? Because when you have coherence, when you have a sequence, when you have... Nobody ever considers the fact that they, you know, will just, you know, randomly it aligned itself into being a sentence. That's what's called the teleological proof. The problem with this is, just to be fair to this, the problem with this in general is that what those on the other side of the Ani Mamin will say is that, yes, well, if you give long enough time, then yes, of course you will have... The randomness can be achieved. Meaning, if you have a million monkeys and a million typewriters, that's fine. What happens if you have a billion monkeys and a billion typewriters in a billion years? 15.3 billion years, maybe. Right. So the point is that if you give it long enough, maybe we'll get there. Which is one of the criticisms on teleological proof. Another criticism on the proof is that all the teleological proof tells us is that a God perhaps maybe created a world, right? But it doesn't help us with consistency, right after that. This is stage one. You know what? I don't want to rush it because there's so many valuable things we can gain. We still have a little bit to do with tradition, actualization, and Jewish history, just as a beginning. But I don't want to rush and give it short shrift in terms of appreciating this. But what we're going to do is that we're going to see that there's no one proof is going to be the nail on the head, and we're going to feel that this is it. There's going to be space of later, but there's going to be also space for lahamin, which is what the rabbi is essentially saying, is that there's the fence that we can get up to, and then there's beyond it, which we need to say that there's that little extra bit, which is called lahamin. And that's where the emunah comes in. Because after all, if there was one proof that was knock down, knock your socks off kind of proof, then the world will be in trouble for not believing. So that's where we're going to stop at this point in time. And next week we're going to start with a little bit more of the circumference and go head into. What was that? Next week is Tisha B'Av. We're not going to be doing on Tisha B'Av. So God willing, in 2 weeks' time we're going to pick up. And what we're going to do is we're going to segue from this into Yichud. Yichud is the is perhaps more complex than this as well. Rabbi Chanan Mirakash Amorat Sakosh Baruch Hu Zakos Yisrael Lufichach Yibolem Tzomis Hashinemar Adnoi Chavetz Manzikoy Agdil Torav Yadir.